Hello there, everybody. It's me, Gary Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Here we go!
Listening to the Emerald Flow Show on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 27 of the Emerald Flow Show. We're a podcast on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. You can follow us on Twitter at Emerald Flow Show, and you can go to voicesofwrestling.com/donate if you're feeling generous and want to donate to the show. I'm Gerard DeTroyo here with Paul Vosch. Paul, we'll keep it quick because we have a lot to talk to about. Might be our biggest episode ever, but you do have a good holiday.
Yeah, I had lovely holidays. Just hung out with family, just drank a load of just wine, just had really great food. And now I'm like back home, just came back from the gym, just took a shower, feeling really refreshed, just had an Americano and I'm ready to record.
Yeah, I had a pretty good holiday too. It was pretty quiet because there was a huge snowstorm. Right on like the 23rd, and well, it didn't shut down everything, you know, there's no point in doing anything at that time or anything like that. So it was quiet, but it was relaxing and good, and I'm ready to get back to talking about wrestling. So we'll start with some really brief thoughts on Wrestle Kingdom, because there's a bit of crossover with for the things that we cover here on the show. Paul, first of all, in the Muto final New Japan match, after Shota Umino pinned Bushi with like a Death Rider, Muto just got right up and bolted right out of the ring.
Yeah, he was basically like halfway down the ramp like 10 seconds after the match, basically. And also kudos to just complete pro Hiroshi Tanahashi, who obviously knew that that was going to happen and just like basically escorted him down the ramp so that he just couldn't be like all by himself down there.
Yeah, he was like, hey, buddy, what are you doing?
Yeah, and Muto also very clearly was like, ah, shit, I didn't think anyone would come with me.
So, yeah, just completely unprofessional trying to, you know, I mean, he took the payday, but clearly wasn't happy that New Japan actually wanted to, you know, put over their young rising star.
Yeah, I mean, but at this point, like, I mean, it's a pattern. Like, every time he loses, he does this.
Well,
like
also,
he did it to Kiyomiya. Like, I feel less bad that he did it to Kiyomiya because he also did it to Nakamura and he also did it at fucking Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah. And, looking back, Tanahashi just should have let Muto do that moonsault.
Yeah.
And let Muto take the pain that would have caused.
No, but I feel like that's definitely something he's saving for the final, like, final show.
Yeah, if he's teasing it still and everything like that. And so, yeah, so obviously can't have that big show without some Muto bullshit. And then obviously Omega and Ospreay, some are calling it the greatest match of all time. I mean, I thought it was incredible. I'm not sure if I would go that high, but yes, obviously lived up to the hype.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think I went like 4.75 on
it. So did I, yeah.
Yeah, like I really, like, obviously that means I hated it. But no, I thought it was really good, but I don't think it was actually like the best match I've seen from either man, if I'm being honest. Like, I thought it was amazing, but like, yeah, like, it obviously didn't hit me on the same level it did some people who think this is the greatest match they've ever seen.
And then, you know what? And for Okada versus Jay White, I liked it. I mean, I think it got pretty good towards the end, like maybe 4 stars.
Yeah, I was actually a bit higher than that. I think I was like 4.5, but I also really like Okada versus Jay White. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's just a really great pairing, and I think they kind of give me what I want as well. So, but obviously they had a bit of a tough act to follow after Omega and Ospreay.
Yeah, for sure. I thought actually, I will give Jay credit. I thought he cut down on the stalling a little more at the beginning of this match compared to some of his other matches. But he was wise to do that because if he had done that, he would have completely lost the crowd.
Yeah, no, because he probably just saw like the left of, like, he probably saw just Ospreay stumble backstage after the match, just covered in blood, and was like, yeah, okay, I don't think I can do 15 minutes of stalling here. That's not going to work.
Yeah. And we got some big announcements. Paul, actually, sorry, we don't have this in the notes, but do you have any thoughts on Mercedes Moné?
Oh, Mercedes Moné. She'll be fine, but that was not a great debut. That was rough.
Well, given the number of bad debuts of big stars that New Japan has had, I actually am not particularly concerned about it.
No, absolutely not. It's almost like a tradition.
AJ Styles. Who else had a bad debut?
Who else had a debut? There aren't that many people that come into New... Like, I didn't like the Kenny debut either when he came out as the cleaner. Like, that was weird.
Even when Jay White returned from excursion, he was sort of just there.
Yeah. No, but I think the ultimate one is still the Okada comes back from excursion, has that absolutely terrible dog shit match with Yoshihashi at Wrestle Kingdom, and then comes, like, it was considered a joke when he challenged Tanahashi after Wrestle Kingdom.
People were laughing.
Yeah. And then he beats him. And then now we're like 10, 12 years after that, and he's the biggest star in Japan. So I think she'll be fine.
As long as Mercedes and Kairi have a good match, it'll be fine.
Yeah. No, and I think she'll cut better promos and everything as well.
Yeah. And I can't remember what match was it where, like, Chris Charlton was like, we have reports of some confrontation backstage.
That was after whatever the LIJ match was, because basically it happened when LIJ gave the post-match press conference.
So that would have been the junior four-way?
I think so, yeah. I think he actually shot his load early on that one, because I think he actually said that before the confrontation actually happened.
Oh, really? Okay, well, it's not really an angle that they do in New Japan.
Yeah.
So probably the timing was off. Although I had a big laugh when Gino Gambino was like, what does Kenny do now?
That would have been very funny, no. But yeah, I mean, then that obviously then led to the announcement that we're going to talk about next.
Yeah. So Yokohama Arena Wrestle Kingdom on January 21st is once again a Noah versus New Japan show. All we know that is that the LIJ versus Kongo feud is back on. And also, I'm assuming there's no Muto because technically this was his last match at Wrestle Kingdom in New Japan.
Yeah. So, and we also already had the last Muta match in New Japan as well. And the Muta Bye Bye show is on the next day. And I don't think Keiji Muto wants, like, this was already the closest I think Muto has gotten from wrestling, like, matches close to each other in, like, quite
and
a while.
He looked really rough on the Tokyo Dome compared to the Budokan.
Yeah, so I don't think he wants to wrestle, like, back-to-back days, so I would assume he's, like, I'm very certain he's not going to be on the show. But we're actually going to find out tomorrow, like, probably by the time you're listening, the press conference has already happened, depending on when this goes up.
So I figure, yeah, but it'll be interesting, because I figure, like, certain people, like, Kaito will be more protected now.
Yeah. I mean, you would hope so, but I mean, when we're going to talk about stuff later, it might be questionable.
Yeah, so that's going to that. So we can look forward to that. I don't know. I had mixed feelings about the Wrestle Kingdom 3 third show last year. Thought Noah sort of got a raw deal in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's going to happen again or not.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it is a New Japan show. Like, it is kind of labeled as a New Japan Noah joint show, but it is, at the end of the day, a Noah show. Like, just the way the Noah Dragon Gate shows were actually Noah shows.
Yes.
So, yeah, it very much kind of depends how much New Japan is willing to give Noah rather than the other way around.
Well, I would say, technically, both companies are sort of ahead where they were a year ago, I would say, overall.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So, but New Japan is still bigger, so I think, you know, probably will get to dictate certain things that Noah fans may dislike after the show.
I mean, I would definitely not expect Kaito to pin Okada here.
Oh, certainly not.
Sort of,
but my biggest fear is Kongo just getting punked out.
I mean, it's Kongo, it's fine.
And also, I'm watching you wrestling commentators or analysts or whoever you are that are clearly haven't watched Noah in a while, because I saw multiple people say that Masa Kitamiya was a member of Kongo, which means you haven't watched Noah in like a year or
so,
even more.
way worse than like it's like so long at this point.
Yeah, was that cage match in 2021 or 2022?
That was 2021.
Oh god.
So, because we didn't cover that on the show.
Oh, that's right. Yes,
yeah, that was a year and a half ago.
God. All right. Well, you've exposed yourselves. So we move on to just Pro Wrestling Noah on its own. Paul, this show was on the 23rd. Neither of us ended up watching it, but it was the End Innovation at Shinjuku Face. And of note, Yasutaku Yano defeated Nosawa Rongai with a cradle, which was cool.
Yeah, so he has his second win on Nosawa, win in a row.
And two title changes. Yohan Keizi beat Atsushi Kotoge and Seki Yoshioka for the junior GHC junior tag titles. And Amasuka defeated Dante Leon in 23-37 to win the title. I heard Yohan Keizi versus Kotoge and Yoshioka was good. But that Amasuka and Dante Leon match, just that's way too long.
Yeah. So who knows? But I also, we had the angle as well with Ogawa and Eita.
Oh, that's right. Yes. Yeah. Sort of Eita and Ogawa are buddies now.
After Nosawa saved them from a Kongo beatdown, because I don't know.
None of it makes any sense.
At least it gave us a great tag team, so I'm not complaining too much. But it's like, okay, sure.
So, yeah, that was basically just whatever is going on. Because the juniors were sort of calm for a while, but now it's going crazy again with the booking and the title changes and everything like that. Although I sympathize with getting the title off of Dante Leon as soon as possible.
No, yeah, no, that's definitely...
And you didn't want to necessarily do that at Budokan even either.
No. He's not he was on the Budokan show. He's definitely not someone that should have a title match at Budokan.
No. So we move on to Noah, the new year, on January 1st at the Nippon Budokan in front of 9,500 fans. And that was labeled a super no vacancy full house, which makes sense because that is a very large set that they use in there.
Yeah.
So that's got to be seen as a success.
Yes, absolutely.
Huge success. Now, Paul, I'm not sure how many of these 9,500 fans had been to a pro wrestling show in the last 12 months, though.
That's definitely a lot of people. That 12 months is probably very generous, because there were definitely people that haven't been to a wrestling show in a long time.
Okay, so even before the pandemic, they hadn't been to a wrestling show in a while, I think.
Yeah, that's because that definitely feels like people that haven't been to, like, because it definitely seems like they weren't even familiar with what the restrictions on cheering are.
That's right. But I think they smell the blood in the water that they're coming to an end.
Yes.
Also?
No, definitely, yeah. But they were definitely noticeable that certain people that were way more over than other people, and it generally tended to be the people who made their debut before the 90s were over, let's put it that way.
Yes, definitely. So we go into the show. Yasutaka Yano defeated Taishi Ozawa in 4 minutes and 1 second with the Fisherman Suplex hold. A nice little opener. Mm-hmm. Ozawa continues to impress. There's not much more to say about that.
No. One of the few matches the bot actually got wrong as well. Oh, yeah, I should mention that. I actually had a bot preview the Noah show.
What was the final tally of the bots?
I think the bot actually got most of it correct. He definitely got this one wrong. And then I think he also... he also got the junior tag title match wrong as well. And the main event. Not the main event, he got the GHC title match wrong as well. Because he said Kano was going to win.
Interesting. That's not a bad little hit rate.
No. It was really good. And I didn't even like guide it in any way on like what it should predict. I literally just wrote include result.
Yeah. And then Masa Kitamiya, Daiki Inaba, and Yoshiki Inamura defeated Mohamed Yone, Akitoshi Saito, and Shuhei Taniguchi in 8:48 when Inamura pinned Yone with the Muso. A funky express match. Solid for what it was. And Inamura getting a win was to set something up. Mm-hmm. Later that we'll talk about.
Yeah. Made perfect sense.
Yep. And then Ninja Mac, Dante Leon, and Alejandro defeated Shuji Kondo, Tadasuke, and Hiroki in 8 minutes and 11 seconds with the Kazadora con Hilo from Alejandro on Hiroki. It was a nice little match for what it was. I thought Ninja Mac and Alejandro actually were kind of hard here and were the highlights.
Yeah. No, I actually would like to see those two as a team, but I have a feeling we're probably going to get like a... If they're sticking around, I'm probably going to get like some sort of Ninja Mac Dante Leon team, but we'll see.
Yeah. And next up, M3K, Masaki Mochizuki, Susumu Mochizuki, and Mochizuki Jr. defeated Hio de Dr. Wagner Jr., Atsushi Kitoge, and Seki Yoshioka in 10:27s with the Mugen package from Susumu on Yoshioka. This is a lot of fun. And I thought Mochizuki Jr. looked great here.
Oh, yeah, no, it's just... Whenever you like Dragon Gate people go elsewhere, it's just always so apparent, like just how insane the working standard in that promotion is and how good their rookies are as well. Because Mochizuki Jr. is still like he's a true rookie. Like he made his debut
it's only been a
like
few months, yeah.
2022. Yeah. Like I think he's been wrestling for like 6 months basically. It's insane.
I hope I don't upset Dragon Gate fans when I say this, but when I see like Misaki and Susumu still rocking the old jackets and the scooters, it definitely has like midlife crisis energy on them.
Oh, no. That's fully the gimmick. That is absolutely the gimmick they're going for. It's literally also Masaki Mochizuki. Like his gimmick now is also that he's a helicopter dad. Okay. Basically, he is like fully in like the whole reason M3K exists is a whole nepotism organization to help his son. Like that's not even hidden. Like that is the actual gimmick.
Okay, well,
like they won a title where Masaki Mochizuki knocked the guy out with a kick and then threw his kid on top of it to win the triangle gate.
Okay, well then, it makes sense then. And then next up, it was not Satoshi Kojima was X because he was already scheduled elsewhere on the card, so he did not pull double duty, but it was Hiroshi Hase, Kazuyuki Fujita, and Kendo Kashin and Nosawa defeating Masakatsu Funaki, Katsuhiko Nakajima, Manabu Soya, and Hajime Ohara in 16 minutes, 36 seconds when Hase pinned Ohara with the Northern Lights suplex. And yeah, we're talking about people who were getting pops that, you know, from before debut before like the 90s even. Well, that was Hase here who was over as hell.
Yeah, it was crazy over. Like I was surprised like how much of a pop he got. And that's when I got the feeling, oh, I know what kind of crowd this is.
Yeah, for sure.
And like now I know how they drew this number. And also that is future GHC champion Hiroshi Hase to you.
Yep. So he's been offered a deal, allegedly, apparently. Sounds like it, according to flagshippatreon.com. But he then also had a press conference where he said, I'm going to continue to be a pro wrestler. Because he got some heat, you know, for... Well, now, to be fair, he's not the only wrestler and / politician that's wrestling.
Also, it's not like he hasn't done this before. Like, he had a match, like, not that long ago. Like, he's been doing that.
January 2022.
Yeah, it's not like he doesn't do this every once in a while where he just pops in and just has a match.
I mean, he was wrestling when he was a cabinet minister.
Yeah.
In, like I have Japanese a feeling government. Now he's just a governor of a small prefecture.
Yeah, maybe then. Like, maybe also this got a bit more, like, play because this was such a major show. Because if you look at like his other match, like they're all like smaller shows generally.
Oh, for sure.
So like they're all like Kirk and Hall shows, so they probably don't really get covered all that much in the national media. And now it's like a big, like notable show at Budokan. And he pops up there. Also like literally like less than a year after taking office as governor of Ishikawa province.
Yeah.
So that might be the reason why he got a bit more play here. But do you think he's signing the contract though?
I think in the end it'll probably just end up with a nice per appearance deal.
Yeah, I don't think he even does that. Like, I think
he could have stayed in wrestling and made a lot more money.
Because he's basically been semi-retired since like 1995.
Yeah.
So like for him now, like nearly 30 years later, at like age 61, to come back and be an active wrestler after having been a politician for this long. Like, he probably could have come back at any moment and become an active wrestler again. But now, like, I think they probably offered him really good money, and he was probably also too polite to just turn them down, like, immediately. Yeah. But I think ultimately he's probably just looking at it and it's like, I can stay in this governor position maybe, like, until whenever I chose to retire, or literally until the day he dies. And to give that up, even for, like, amazing money that Noah might have offered him, I don't know if he's willing to, like, work a regular schedule and take like loads of bumps at this age, even if his body is still like, even if he's still looking really good for a 61-year-old.
Well, that's the reason why he looks so good for a 61-year-old professional wrestler, because he's been wrestling sporadically for the last 28 years.
Yeah, I think I did the math, and he did like 134 matches in 1994, and he did like 200 something matches since then.
Yeah.
So that's the reason why he still looks that good.
Less than 10 a year.
Yeah. Like, and most of those matches are also in, like, in the immediate years afterwards. Like, basically since 2000, he does matches.
The front is front loaded in All Japan.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he did like 20, 30 matches in like 95 and 96 and like 97. And then basically it's like 1, 2, 3, 5 per year after that.
Sometimes just one.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. He obviously also stayed in shape. So, like I kind of get it, but why they would want to bring him in. But it's also, like, I don't know. It's kind of worrying for me that they even attempt to do this. Because, like, that just means they want to... Like, the Muto thing is obviously, like, we're, like, weeks away from this whole thing, thing and ending. And the fact that their next instinct is to bring in Hiroshi Hase, like, that definitely does not bode well. Because that's just, like... diminishing returns. Like, he obviously was crazy over here, but how many of those same people would actually buy a ticket to a show headlined by Hiroshi Hase?
Not if he's on every show or every Korakin or whatever.
Yeah, and you would have to give him the title as well if you bring him in.
Could you give him the national title?
I don't know. Like, if I'm Hase and I'm giving up my governor position, the main title.
This is one of the least egotistical guys in all of professional wrestling who's put over whoever has been asked of him, though.
True. But still, like, again, like, it would take me, like, even if I'm there, like, if I need to give up, like, a governor position, like, it would take a lot for me to do that if I am in it.
Well, and if he resigns, he probably will never get elected again.
No, yeah, because he literally took office less than a year ago, March 2022.
Pieces out for a big wrestling contract. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's done as a politician. Like, he's never getting elected to anything ever again if he does that.
But anyway, I think the moral of the story is, this is like still Noah's mindset.
Yeah.
And that doesn't bode well to what happens after. Even though I think there's a lot of good things that they've been doing recently, that doesn't bode well for what happens once Muto's gone.
It also doesn't really show a lot of trust in Kaito as well.
No. So next up, we had Jack Morris defeat Timothy Thatcher in 12 minutes and 16 seconds with a Tiger Driver. We'll get to the post-match in a second. This match had very little heat. Certainly, they didn't make any noise. The clapping was polite as opposed to even just enthusiastic clapping. I thought it was pretty solid, though. Like, Thatcher worked over the arm and then Morris made his big comeback. They tried.
Yeah, I mean, the match was solid. I think I've seen better from both men than Noah, though. Yeah. Like, obviously, Fetcher's match with Kaito was a lot better. And then I've seen a lot better matches from Jack Morris, like, in the N1 as well. But, yeah, I mean, they also only got like 12 minutes as well, so it's not like they could have even really, like, they told a solid story for what they did, but obviously it didn't help that the crowd. I think there was also a lot of people in the crowd that just didn't have any idea who these two were.
Absolutely. And then after the match, we got the January 1st warning.
This motherfucker.
Familiar theme hit.
Also has the same theme. He has the same tights. Everything is no difference at all.
The theme is kind of cool. I'd keep that. But yeah, he came out in like the Darth Vader outfit, wearing the Total Eclipse tights. It's Jake Lee, folks. And he still doing the point to the sky, comes in, makes Jack Morris his friend. They haven't even announced that they're a tag team, which sort of even makes less sense.
Comes into like derail Drake Morris's push as well. It makes it even worse.
Now to crickets. Now I talked to three people at the show. Two of them said that they heard nothing, and then one person said they heard some gasps in their section. But that's not exactly, you know.
I made a 4-minute tribute video to us dunking on Jake. Because I was like, well, he's going off to fucking New Japan now, and we can check in on him every once in a while, but we're done with him for now. And then this fucking dipshit turns up in Noah immediately afterwards, and he's the exact same. I don't want
to
do
But there's
this
more
again.
To the story that's even more hilarious. According to Flagship Patreon story, Jake has a contract offer from Noah but hasn't signed it because he probably still thinks he can get into New Japan. But it doesn't sound like New Japan is particularly interested.
And he's going to come out on Noah's Dash any minute now.
And
I don't care that the show ended 4 hours ago.
And also, he says he made, like, you know, cryptic comments like, I'm not going to be in Noah forever.
Okay.
So this guy thinks he's like, I'd sign the contract if I were Jake.
Yeah. What if this just ends with him crawling back to All Japan next year?
Oh, my God. Then you put him in some opening matches for a while.
God. I mean, we're going to, like, do we actually have it in the run sheet on, oh yeah, that match that they announced with him? No, I don't think we have, right?
No, but I was going to get to that in a second. I just wanted to see what else, other Jake things that should be talked about here. Yeah, I don't know. Not having a new look was just ridiculous.
No, it's still the fucking Total Eclipse. The factions doesn't exist anymore.
And so on January 8th at Korakuen Hall, we're getting Jake Lee versus Yoshiki Inamura, which I think will be great.
Yeah, be good. Or the way I dubbed the match, the stoppable force meets the movable object.
Yeah, so...
Jake should win this, right? Because he's the new debut. Yeah. And Inamura constantly gets put into positions where, like, he's in singles matches and he loses. But on the other hand, if Jake loses here, he's a full-on geek, and you can never bet against Jake being a geek. So
no,
I will absolutely not lock anything up here because no.
Well, I certainly wouldn't lock it. You know what? I'm gonna lock it.
Yeah, you're gonna lock up Jake.
I'm gonna lock up Jake versus Inamura because
you're betting against Jake's geek powers. That's.
No,
that's
because I think he's getting heated up maybe to possibly face Kaito, and then he'll probably just flounder in the mid-card or leave after that. Could you see that happening?
I mean, I could see that happening, but yeah. I don't know. I just never would bet on against Jake Lee not being a geek. But obviously, he's brand new in Noah, and it would be very weird if they bring him in and then immediately drop him out. But it would also be the most Jake Lee thing ever as well.
Oh, for sure. So yeah, that's, I think any sort of the hottest free agent in Japan sort of went out with a whimper.
Yeah, but as you said, January 1st warning revealed as MMA legend Jake Lee.
And then after that we had it should be noted that they tried to really sell it on the commentary team, but I don't know if Stuart Fulton knew who Jake Lee was.
No, he very clearly didn't.
And for the GHC Junior Heavyweight title, Amasaka defeated Junta Miyawaki in 15 minutes with a modified crucifix hold. I thought this was pretty good, maybe not great. They did do some, like, lots of dives and high-flying stuff. And, you know, I think the whole point of this match was just to make, you know, even though Junta didn't win, just to be like, okay, he's back from his excursion. He's now competitive with the junior champion.
Yep, I think that was basically the goal here, and I think that went really well. I think there's definitely something Like, I think he's obviously going to win this belt eventually.
Oh, I think so too, yeah.
Yeah. No, probably sooner rather than later as well. But I feel like it's the right decision to keep it in Amaxa for now and just have him have a bit of a run with the belt. And then you can figure out what you're going to do with it afterwards.
Yep. Well, I mean, he deserves it because he's like one of the best juniors in the company. And
No. I'm very happy that they actually made the decision to push him, because for a long time I've been like banging that drum that like he is one of their best juniors and that he finally like gets a well-deserved run. Like, I'm very happy about that.
Yeah, and he could bring some stability to it.
Yeah. Because this is next also up, basically like a gold watch run as well, because he's older than people think as well.
Yeah, he's like 37, maybe 38.
It's older. I think it's like nearly 40, yeah.
Yeah. And then for the GHC tag team title, Takashi Sugera and Satoshi Kojima defeated Maru Ken, Naomichi Marufuji, and Kenta in 18 minutes and 40 seconds with a Western Lariat from Kojima on Marufuji. This is just a bunch of old guys hitting each other really hard, and it was awesome. You know, they just took it to each other. Kenta, I can't say Kenta dialed it back to like 2006, but Kenta maybe dialed it back a few years and looked better here than he has recently.
Yeah, I'm always really happy. Kenta always seems to like work hard whenever he actually comes back to Noah, which I'm happy about. And yeah, as you said, this was just four old men just beating the shit out of each other, and it was great. I think I went 4 stars on it. So
second best match of the show, I thought.
Yes, absolutely. Second best match on the show. Just a ton of fun. And I also agree with the decision to like keep it on Segura and Kojima as well.
Yeah.
Because unless you get regular dates on Kenta, like.
Yeah. Kenta's just a favor because they got Muto for the Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah.
So it was just a one night thing. Yeah. Well, exactly. I'm sure he'll be back at some point, but not a regular.
No. I think he's going to pop in every once in a while for like big shows, as long as Noah and New Japan stay on somewhat friendly terms, which still seems to be the case. I mean, they're doing another joint show, so I mean, obviously, at some point, the relationship is going to break down because Noah's getting too big, basically. So eventually, that will end. But for now, it seems like they're still on good terms.
Yeah. And then next up for the GHC Junior Heavyweight title, Yoshinori Ogawa and Eita defeated Yohei and KZ in 19 minutes and 17 seconds with the Imperial Uno from Eita on Yohei. And then the champions lose their titles in like 9 days.
Yep.
It was pretty good. Maybe went a couple minutes too long. For some reason, I was sort of expecting this to be better than it was.
I mean, I thought the finishing sequence of this was really cool, though. With Eita and Yohei, where Eita just absolutely walloped Yohei with the Imperial Uno for the finish. I thought that was really fun. Otherwise, yeah, I also thought this went a little bit too long. And I also would have liked to actually see more of Casey. Like, I don't think he was really, like, he really did all that much in the match.
He's just getting the paycheck in another company, brother.
Yeah, that's really what this felt like. I thought Eita actually worked harder than I've actually previously seen him work, and I actually said this in the preview, and I said this on the last episode, that I'm done being excited for Eita matches, and then they go and put him in a tag team with Ogawa. So now I'm still cautious. Now I'm again a little bit cautiously optimistic if this is the kind of Eita match that we're going to get going forward.
Well, he's a babyface now, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. We'll see how long this lasts. And if this is what we're going to get, then I'm happy he's sticking around.
And then for the GHC heavyweight title, Kaito Kiyomiya defeated Kenno in 19 minutes and 23 seconds with the Shining Wizard. This was about the match of the year for a couple days at least. But it was just incredible sprint because this is a little shorter than some of their other matches. But they just decided that, you know, they got the semi-main event spot, lost it to Muta. So they're just going to go out there and almost kill each other with some just crazy spots, like Kenno giving Kiyomiya a Falcon Arrow from the second rope onto the apron and stuff like that.
That I actually legitimately screamed when I saw that spot. Like, I just... It was like, oh my god, Kaito's dead. Just actually,
it was
dead.
As crazy as anything you saw in like Osprey and Omega. Yeah. In terms of bumps.
Yeah, I actually gave both of them the same rating.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I went 4.5 on this one. I think I liked Osprey versus Omega a little more, but this is still incredible. This was this better than their match on January 1st last year?
Yeah, I don't
think so. I haven't rewatched it, so
I like that match, but I definitely felt they've had better matches before, and I like this match more. Definitely like this match a lot more than I did the one from last year.
Yeah, well, it was definitely leaps and bounds better than their last one.
Oh yeah,
but they were clearly like holding back.
Yes, that now in hindsight, it's very clear that that's what was happening. Where they were like, "And we're just gonna do this again at Budokan in a couple of months." So. Let's not go crazy. Let's just get through this, and then we're gonna go all out at Budokan when they clearly did.
Now they definitely did, and now the question is whether or not this gets some eyes on both of them.
Hopefully,
from people that maybe not too familiar with them. I hope it did. Yeah. They certainly kill themselves trying to do it.
But then obviously Kano is gonna like eat a Destino in like a couple of weeks. And get pinned by Naito.
That's very possible. And then in the main event, special singles match, WWE superstar Shinsuke Nakamura defeated Great Muda in 18 minutes and 19 seconds with a Kinshasa. This was a spectacle from the beginning, from the entrances, which were both great. Nakamura had that guy with whose name escapes me now, with the electric violin playing out his original WWE theme, because he had that remix one for a while. I don't know if he still uses it. But his original WWE theme is way better than the remix, I think.
Yeah. No, there were a lot of people being like, oh, I'm sad it's not subconscious. But it's like, it never could be subconscious. Like, owned by New Japan.
Well, not only that, but in everything they refer to Nakamura as WWE superstar, Shinsuke Nakamura.
Yeah.
And they had his name in all caps in English, like, you know.
Yeah, even in like the official press releases and everything.
This is like Hideo Itami when he was in NOAH.
Yeah, he was.
For the Mara Fuji anniversary show.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't Kenta, it was Hideo Itami.
So, I thought, I don't watch WWE, certainly not recently, but this is better than anything I saw Nakamura in, you know, some time.
Yeah.
Maybe except for his NXT run.
Yeah, definitely. Like, at least from what I've heard.
He was certainly trying.
Yeah, he definitely was trying really hard here. And that entrance was just absolutely insane. Like, I think this whole thing was worth it just for, like, the entrance that Nakamura did. And that very much felt reminiscent of his Statue of Liberty entrance that he did when he had a match with Ibushi. I don't remember which Wrestle Kingdom that was.
Yes. That is true.
And it was also very clear, like, Muta was also crazy over as well.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, I thought he looked decent enough. Certainly better than he did a couple days later.
Yeah. And the crowd just went full. We don't care about cheering restrictions on this one.
No, this is like heat throughout.
Yeah.
Not even just for the big spots.
No. Like they literally actually violated even the relaxed restrictions that New Japan is going to do now. Where it's like, well, don't sing along. Like if you do quick chants, that's fine, but don't sing like full songs, basically. And they just sang along to Nakamura's entrance theme.
Yeah, exactly. So do we have to talk about Great Muda's AJ Styles moment afterwards?
Great Muda's AJ Styles, where he just rolled out the ring and bailed?
No, his comments.
Oh, yeah. Granddad throws around homophobic slurs. Yeah.
Getting himself canceled on the way out.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Muda.
Which was so fascinating that he was saying them in English, too.
Yeah, because I don't get
would assume, like, the slurs are the different words in Japanese.
So maybe he was trying to...
They have their own slurs?
Yeah, I don't... In kayfabe, does Muda speak Japanese? Like, because it was Great Muta, not Muto. Like, does Muda speak Japanese?
Right.
Like, I don't remember Great Muta giving interviews, but I'm pretty sure in kayfabe, Muta doesn't speak Japanese, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually. Strange, horrible sense.
Yeah. That's still not great, though, that he didn't immediately no. goes into homophobic slurs.
Oh, my God.
Jesus. For like no reason as well, completely unprovoked.
Okay, the NOAH Global English account straight up posted this, like,
yes.
Muda's backstage comments on their Twitter, and I was like, oh my God, what are you doing?
Yeah, I don't know, like, I don't, yeah.
Jesus.
I get that you want to capitalize on, like, you can just put in the Nakamura, like, the Nakamura entrance just did bonkers numbers on the NOAH Global, like, YouTube channel. So, I get that you want to capitalize on that, but maybe don't put in the homophobic slurs from Muda. You know, maybe leave those out. It's fine.
Yeah. God. All right. So Noah's got a few shows coming up on Cork and Hall doubleheader that features a Congo versus Noah like tournament and the Inamura versus Jake Lee match. So that's coming up. But the big thing we still don't know is what's going on other than the like Darby Allin, Sting and Great Muda. We don't even know who their partners are on that show or their opponents. Or anyone else.
Yeah, I don't know when they're going to announce that because we're going to get the announcement for the Yokohama show tomorrow.
Well, do they announce it at Korakuen on the 8th, I think?
I guess so. Maybe. But yeah. I mean, we still have like the Shuffle Tag Tournament coming up as well. So
The Shuffle Tag Tournament was New Year's Eve.
No, sorry. There's going to be the Congo Shuffle Tournament.
Yeah, the Congo versus Noah show.
And then there's the all like Mystery Vortex show right on the same day as well. So yep. Maybe after that.
Yeah, I would assume they'd have to do it this weekend.
Yeah, because you can't do it at the like Yokohama show because the show is the next day.
Oh no. And so we have some breaking news, Paul.
Oh.
Tajiri has won the Kyushu Pro Championship and has also joined the promotion. And now I understand you've watched this match.
Yeah, I actually did watch this match like an hour ago. I also basically already forgot it. it was a wrestling match that happened. It's the best way I can describe it. I don't know. I guess maybe like the most memorable thing that happened was basically Tajiri trying to like do the tarantula and just getting shoved to the outside. But other than that, like it was a perfectly acceptable pro wrestling match. It happened and Tajiri won the title.
Now, did you watch Hidemaru Sasaki versus Hikaru Sato in a UWF rules match?
No, I
heard that was good.
Yeah, I only saw the thumbnail of Tajiri with the title and I was like, oh, I'm gonna have to check that one out. But I'm probably gonna go back and check out the Sato match as well.
Okay, so that's it for pro wrestling. Noah, I think. Paul, unless you had any other thoughts?
Could maybe just briefly talk about the finish of Nakamura versus Muta.
Oh, yeah. He sucked the... this has led to the homophobic comments.
Gave him
comments.
A French kiss.
To suck out the mist and then misted Muta and gave him the Kinshasa, which is a slightly different move than the Bombaye. So he used his WWE finisher.
Yeah. I mean, which makes sense.
But he also stole that from Will Ospreay versus Bushi.
Yeah. But it was still a really cool finish, though.
Yeah, no, it was good. I mean, I liked the match. It went like 3.5.
Yeah, no.
It was a spectacle.
It was a complete spectacle. Like, it was exactly what it needed to be. Both men tried hard. And yeah, it was just, it was super over with the crowd. So I think just the show as a whole is just a massive success for Noah.
Oh, for sure. And I thought, you know, the undercard, some of the choices they did were good and smart.
Yeah.
I just hope they can keep the momentum up and not do something stupid like offering Hiroshi Hase lots of money.
Yeah, so hopefully, like, Noah can... Like, and we've seen that from multiple people saying as well that they are going to give Noah a shot to, like, watch them regularly going forward.
Yeah, well, because I think no old guy's going to win any titles, at least for a couple of months.
Why are you going around and jinxing that?
Not until after Muto retires, at least.
True. Yeah, I don't think Kaito's losing that belt before the end, like before the new before the Muto retirement show.
No, he's not. Hopefully, they finally get that Jack Morris match, though.
No, because now he's in a tag team with Jake.
Oh right, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I'm saying he comes in and he derails Jack Morris. Like first thing he does is derails Jack Morris's push.
All right, so we move on to All Japan Pro Wrestling, and we start with the show on Christmas Day, December 25th at Korakuen Hall in front of 1,296 fans, which was a pretty good number, although I think that was helped by some of the talent, outside talent on this show. And it was also broadcast live on Gaora, I think, or on Hulu in Japan. So we actually got match graphics.
Yeah.
With people's names and ages and weights and stuff like that.
And not just and we still got the beautiful PowerPoint match cards though at the beginning of the show.
Yes, we did though. The budget was only increased slightly. Yeah. So open the show, special singles match, Kaz Hayashi defeated Rising Hayato in 7 minutes and 1 second with the final cut. I thought it was solid for what it was. It was a little too short, but you know, good opener. Okay, so basically with that, we had Hayato, you know, coming in and doing all of his flashy stuff. And then, you know, Hayashi made the experienced veteran comeback and then got the win. So I think it was a good opener. I guess you could say it was a little surprising that Hayashi did win. Maybe you'd want to get Hayato a big win over an established veteran. But ultimately, as we'd see a little later, things would change, and it sort of made sense in context and everything like that. So it was ultimately a good opener. And then next up, in a special 8-man tag team match, we had Taru, Jun Saito, Rei Saito, and Toshizo defeated Ryuki Honda, Yusuke Kodama, Masao Hanabata, and Minoru Tanaka in 8 minutes and 32 seconds with a Cobra Clutch Slam from Jun on Hanabata. I thought that this was decent for what it was. I mean, it's a multi-man Voodoo Murders match, but I thought there was some decent action. I thought Honda tried well when he was in there, looking good. I thought Minoru Tanaka was a little fired up, as we will talk about going to the match, but, you know, it was standard fare, but not too offensive by Voodoo standards, Voodoo Murder standards, I should say.
Yeah, no. This was an acceptable Voodoo Murderers match, and maybe one of their last matches together as well. Question mark.
But I'm excited. And then next up, a special singles match in Naoya Nomura defeated Yoshitatsu in 1 minute and 47 seconds with the spear into the jackknife hold. He beat that nerd quick, Paul.
Yeah, and you successfully picked your lock correctly, as did I.
Yes. I really thought that was a lock, and it was, I thought maybe, I guess they're still doing the Nomura like getting quick wins gimmick, which I like. Mm-hmm. And Yoshitatsu was the perfect guy to have that happen to.
Yeah.
And then it's called the PWF Cup Special 6-Man Tag Match. Tajiri Toriano and Black Mansa Ray defeated Yuji Nagata, Dan Tamara, and Tomoaki Hanma, subbing in for Hikaru Sato, who was still healing up from a big bruise on his back, with a horizontal cradle from Yano on Tamura. Now, this was Tajiri's last match in All Japan, and he still went over. Jesus.
Yeah.
This wasn't so very weird. Good. This wasn't very good.
No.
No, it's not the worst match I watched on any of these shows, I can tell you that.
No, but, it's such a weird decision that, like, the Tajiri team goes over here when, like, he could take the pin, or Black Mansa Ray could take the pin, but instead it's Dan. Like, I don't get that one either.
Yeah. And then in a special 6-man tag match, Yuto Nakashima, Ryohei Oiwa, and Kosei Fujita defeated Hokuto Omori, Ryo Inoue, and Yuma Anzai in 10 minutes and 11 seconds with a crab hold from Fujita on Inoue. This wasn't as good as that match from October 2nd, which was like the New Japan versus All Japan Young Guys matches plus Kento and Nagata. But this was still pretty darn good. And they sort of, you know, just elbowed and slapped the shit out of each other. And it's definitely a much watch. If you like that match on October 2nd, you should watch this match. And after the match, they're clearly building to an Anzai versus Nakashima singles match.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm excited for that one as well. Also interesting that Fujita is the one that got the win here, because he actually joined TMDK at New Year Dash today. So I wasn't. And
well, he seems to be the one that they're highest on.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're high on Oiwa, because they gave Oiwa the Oleg Bolton match.
Yep.
But it seems like maybe they're willing to sacrifice Nakashima to Anzai.
Yeah, which, why not? And also, like, obviously, the fact that Inoue was the one that took the pin here and not Anzai.
Yeah, of course.
Like, I don't, like, obviously, we talk about it before, but, like, it's so obvious that he's just getting so much more protected than any other young boy is.
Yeah, definitely. But, yeah, definitely check this out if you like that first match from October. Mm-hmm. And special singles match, Manabu Soya defeated Takao Mori in 8 minutes and 40 seconds with the Dando. I mean, it was fine for what it was, but I was expecting maybe something a little more. Well, I mean, these, especially Omori, obviously older, you can't, epic is not the word, but like, put more into this match to tell a story, because they had a whole video package before this match started talking about how, you know, this is get wild tag team partners coming into conflict. So I'm sort of also wondering if, you know, with Noah and All Japan working again, if Soy is going to be making more appearances, and this was just something that set something up later.
Might be, but yeah, as you said as well, like after the video package, I was actually kind of hyped for this match. And then it was just a regular wrestling match where they didn't even really do anything special or did any callbacks or anything like that. Yeah, but maybe with Sawyer winning, yeah, maybe he's coming back a bit more regularly and we'll see what comes out of that.
I could see Sawyer in the Champion Carnival, actually.
Yeah, he would be a good filler in there.
Yeah. And next up, oh, I'm excited to talk about this one. Suwama, Mayumi Ozaki, and Maya Yukini defeated Shuji Ishikawa, Chihiro Hashimoto, and Yu in 18 minutes and 4 seconds when Suwama used a backdrop hold on Ishikawa. Paul, I went 4.5 stars on this match. Okay. I put it at number 10 on my match of the year list. This was so much fun. I have watched it like 3 or 4 times. I loved everything about this. I loved Chihiro taking down Suwama in a grapple at the beginning of the match. I love Chihiro giving Suwama a German suplex later on in the match. I love the heel work. I loved Ozaki like choking out like a much, much larger person in Ishikawa with the chain on the outside. And credit to them both. They sold for the women, especially Suwama. He sold for both Yu and Hashimoto. And if you notice after the match when they're doing like the match posing for the photographers, he grabs Ozaki and tells her to stand in the middle. when they're doing the photo ops and everything like that. I don't have much to say nice about Suwama a lot of the time these days, but he clearly respects women's wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good sign. That's obvious from the fact that he wants to do his own promotion there as well.
Well, yeah, but I mean, he showed it here because obviously Evolution hasn't launched yet. The women are still training and everything like that. But I would say that's a good sign given sort of the respect he showed here to the women.
Yeah, yeah. No. I don't think I'm as high as you on this match, but I thought this was a ton of fun. Like, it's always very obvious when wrestlers are working and they're having fun, and everyone here was just having a shit ton of fun as well.
At one point, like, when Ishikawa was getting whipped, he started laughing, but he tried not
to. Yeah. Who knows? Maybe he's into that.
Well, of course, right? Yeah, because, like, Ishikawa joined the same S&M club as Dan Tamer in this. He's got the collar.
Maybe, that's why. Well, I mean, they're both known for hanging around with Suwama, so maybe we can do some conclusions to Suwama there as well.
Yes, definitely. But, I mean, I love this so much. And just, like, I want the feud between Chihiro and Suwama to continue.
I mean, where do you blow that off?
She beat Shinya Aoki. She beat Shinya Aoki in DDT.
Huh?
On Nevermind, right? So she's already been pinning men and everything like that. Like, do you do a singles match? Or is it just like you can't have Suwama lose to her, so it's no point? Because she's going
to
lose anyway.
I mean, Suwama would probably be willing to lose to her, I guess.
Maybe in a tag. I don't know. But I just feel like, could you do like a 20-minute time limit? Could you? I don't know. Or another tag match.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wanted to continue.
Apropos Shinya Aoki, I think we kind of forgot to mention that he was at Noah Budokan as well, wearing a really shitty mask. A really shitty Muda mask.
Oh, was that Shinya Aoki?
I'm pretty sure it was.
That would make sense. He would be hanging around with the shooters. Yeah. Because he came out and they were teasing him as X.
Yeah, and then he just...
guy in that mask. And then
disappeared.
They came out.
Yeah.
But they never revealed who was under this mask.
That made the whole thing even better, but I'm pretty sure that was him.
That makes sense. But yeah, I mean, I wanted to talk about this. I just love the match.
So much fun, yeah.
And Suwama's selling in this was great.
Yeah.
He was selling for the women. And when he took that, like, cannonball from you in the corner. And, like, from the minute it started, it was just perfect.
Oh, yeah, I know. You had just three, like, uber heels and three, like, uber baby faces in there. It was just a very, like, classical structure in that way. And, you know, everyone, like, played the role to perfection as well.
Yeah, and it had things, like, I don't necessarily like in wrestling a ton, like, cheating. Because, like, you know, they just had, like, Ozaki had her chain, Yukiya had her whip, and they were just using it liberally.
Yeah.
Not even bother trying to distract the ref. There's a lot of crowd brawling or brawling around the ring, but it just somehow all worked and came together.
Oh, yeah, I know. If it works, it works really well. It's just that a lot of wrestlers don't really know how to do it properly.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, that's the whole, like, Oz Academy gimmick.
Yeah.
So if anyone's going to be able to pull it off, it's going to be, like, Ozaki and Yukiya.
Yeah.
So that was, to me, the highlight and far and away the best match of the show.
Oh, no, for sure. It was the best match on the show.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, It's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it, and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They're on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or, wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Although the next one was pretty good as well.
Yeah, it was. In the main event, All Japan Pro Wrestling 50th Anniversary Final Special 8-Man Tag Match, Kento Miyahara, Atsuki Aoyagi, Taichi, and Yoshinobu Kanemaru versus Jake Lee, Yuma Aoyagi, Sonata, and Bushi went to a time limit draw of 30 minutes. I thought this actually started off pretty slow, and it was just all the guys doing their character work. But the last few minutes were really great. Mm-hmm. But we got two time limit draws in the main event on back-to-back All Japan shows because apparently they don't want to pin Jake Lee on his way out.
Yeah, no, because...
Now, I think they should have pinned him on the previous show.
Yes, yeah.
More so than this one.
Yeah.
But now it's back two back-to-back time limit draws. Paul, is Rossi Ogawa booking All Japan now?
I mean, apparently so. I mean, we've got really good women's wrestling and time limit draws, so like clearly both staples of Rossi Ogawa.
Yes. So yeah, I mean, obviously it was like another emotional thing. It was a nice tribute to see all of these guys back who made their careers in All Japan once. And who knows? I think some of them might be popping in again.
I mean, there was the rumor. I mean, that was part of the Patreon post as well that Bushi might be coming back to All Japan.
I don't need Bushi back in All Japan.
Not really.
He's just a waste of, like, he'd just be a waste of money.
Yeah, no.
Putting him over Atsuki doesn't mean anything when you have, well, we'll get to it. But, like, there are more important junior stars in the company's history that Atsuki can beat.
Yeah, and Bushi, like, isn't really worth a whole lot without the rest of MLJ.
I would bring in Kanemaru, who's older than Bushi, back.
Oh, absolutely.
Bring back Bushi.
Absolutely.
Hopefully Bushi is not returning. I mean, I don't have a problem with him popping up once in a while, but I do not want him full-time in All Japan or anything like that.
As a tribute act, yeah, that's great, but, like, he's not a draw without LIJ. Like, his whole value is that he's a member of a really popular faction.
And because he's a guy who eats the pins.
Yeah.
So we move on to January 2nd at Corken Hall in front of 1,055 fans. That's down from the Christmas Day show, but that's still good. Over 1,000 is good these days for Corken, and Corken is good for All Japan. And it was way up from last year. So
it was,
I think.
But it's also like trying to look at like last time they drew this bad, like excluding pandemic years, the last time they drew this badly was like back in like 2015, I think, when they had like a show that drew like less than this. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, they had one Corken Hall in 2019 that drew 917.
Yeah. Oh,
you know what the main event of that show was?
Well, something involving
Jake. Do you know what the main event was? What?
Something involving Jake.
No, it was Zeus versus Ryuji Sai in a number one contenders match for the Triple Crown.
I erased that from my mind. Yeah, that was terrible.
So first off, we had Ryuki Honda, Yusuke Kodama, and Masao Hanabata, Gungnir of Anarchy. They defeated Dan Tamura, Ryo Inoue, and Yuma Anzai in 7 minutes and 20 seconds with the final vent from Honda on Inoue. Fun opener.
Yep.
Once again, just, you know, these guys could go a couple more minutes, but it was perfectly good opener for what it was.
Mm-hmm. Gotta heat up Honda for his match against Nomura.
Yep. And then next up, we had Takao Mori, Rising Hayato, and Kaz Hayashi defeated Yoshitatsu, Black Mensure, and Mitsuya Nagai in 9:05 when Hayashi used a final cut on Mensure, again, heating Hayashi up for something. Paul, I'll say this. This match exceeded my low expectations.
Oh, definitely, yeah. Because Nagai also seems to be motivated, which we found out.
I was going to say
later.
I wrote a review on Voice of Wrestling, and I said Nagai looks better now than he did back in like Noah in 2018, 2019, in Hooligans.
Yeah, no. He definitely, like, I don't know. Like, seems, it also seems like All Japan wants to do something with him, so that might be the reason as well.
Yeah. So yeah, simple, just to get Hayashi over, but you know, completely inoffensive. Next up. Minoru Suzuki and Naruki Doi defeated Shuji Ishikawa and Hokuto Omori in 11 minutes and 19 seconds with a Gotch-style prior driver on Suzuki versus Omori. I thought this was a lot of fun. This was really about sort of, well, I thought it was about reigniting the Omorian-Suzuki feud, but that would take a very interesting direction after the end of the match. But the match was a lot of fun, I thought.
Yeah, no, the match was pretty good as well. I really like this Minoru Suzuki Naruki Doi team, and I'm very happy that we're actually going to get more of them as well.
And after the match, Omori came up to Suzuki and bowed and basically said, "You can have me now." And he left with Doi and Suzuki, and they have formed a new Suzuki Gun, Neo Suzuki Gun, or whatever you want it is. It doesn't have a name yet, but Suzuki has immediately formed a new faction in All Japan.
He basically did it in New Japan as well, where like him and Despy actually saved Ren Narita at New Year Dash.
Oh, that's right.
So either maybe we're going to see a fusion of those two. That actually would be an amazing faction. Suzuki, Doi, Omori, El Desperado, and Ren Narita. That would be...
Yes.
That is literally like the Paul faction.
Yeah, that would be really good. I'm not sure if we're going to get that, but I kind of hope we do. Next up, we had in a World Tag Team Title Skirmish number one contenders match, Nomu Yagi, Yuma Aoyagi, and Naoya Nomura defeated Jun Saito and Rei Saito in 11 minutes and 48 seconds when Aoyagi did a cradle on Jun, who had tried to give him a Koba clutch slam. Paul, this sort of, I was really hyped for this, but it sort of didn't live up to what I was expecting. I thought the Saito spent way too much time on in control here, and that sort of exposed them.
I actually kind of like this one. I thought, because again, like the Saitos bring something unique, so I thought they did that here as well. Can get a bit tiresome and in control too much, but I think like Yuma and Naoya made up for that with the selling. So if
Yuma definitely.
Yeah,
did.
Like Yuma kind of sold his ass off, and that really helped the match. So yeah, no, I definitely didn't think this was like an amazing match, but I liked it well enough.
Yeah, I think this should. I think ideally, if you want to maximize, I think I kind of understand what they were going for telling the story here, but I think to maximize overall quality, it should have been more back and forth.
Yeah, but again, like I don't think the Saitos are really like Yuma and Naoya are more of a team that excel more with this type of story rather than going like a straight back and forth. And I think the Saitos are also like I think the Saitos can go back and forth when they're facing someone like Ishikawa and Cyrus.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then so next up for the PWF World Junior Heavyweight title, Atsuki Aoyagi defeated Hikaru Sato in 15 minutes and 10 seconds with the Firebird Splash. Thought it started off a little slow, but it really caught me by the end. I thought Sato was going to submit Atsuki. I really did when I was watching this. I watched it live and everything. And I thought it was really compelling in the end. And I thought it told a great story because Atsuki finally beat Sato after numerous meetings in the past. And, you know, Sato puts the belt on him and sort of says, you know, you're the junior ace now, kid.
Yeah. No, I think love that they also kind of played back to some of the stuff that they've done in the past, like the recent match that they had in the Junior Battle of Glory, where Sato tapped out Aoyagi, like, just before the match ended, which we talked about on the last show. I like that they actually played back to that. And, yeah, I thought that actually, as you said, it really helped the match as well because you really felt that Sato could actually do it. And then Atsuki just manages to just do a quick comeback and then hit the splash for the win. And I thought that worked really well.
Mm-hmm. And then after the match, Kaz Hayashi came to challenge. Mm-hmm. As we've seen, he's been picking up wins. And it's going to be the battle of the old ace versus the new one.
Yeah. I thought that's going to be a ton of fun as well. So do you think Kaz is going to win or are they keeping it on
no.
Atsuki?
Because you completely derail any momentum by just having the old ace that's like almost 50 coming and winning the title.
Yeah.
Not that they wouldn't do that.
That's
this
the thing
is all we're talking about. But I feel like, okay, you've already given Kaz two wins over these two shows. And there's another like six-man tag coming up that he's going to be in before they have the title match. So, yeah, I think, does Kaz even want to have the title? I mean, he loses a lot in great as well. So I'm pretty confident Atsuki's going to beat him.
No, yeah, probably is. But again, I can't rule it out that they're going to do a story where Kaz becomes kind of a mountain that Atsuki needs to overcome.
I think if you were going to do establishing, I would use Naruki Doi if that instead of Kaz Hayashi.
No, I would probably put Doi in that
or
role
maybe,
as well.
Yeah. And then next up for the World Tag Team Championship, Kento Miyahara and Takuya Nomura defeated Suwama and Kono in 17:27. With the sleeper hold from Nomura on Kono, the champions fail on their first defense, much like Suwama failed on his first defense as a Voodoo Murders Triple Crown champion. First of all, Paul, do you think this was the plan all along now?
Yeah, because they did this title change. So that makes it a lot more likely that that what was actually the plan, because we also now have an announcement for the return match of Shotaro Ashino.
On the 27th.
Yeah, so if they would have just, if the plan was actually like to actually keep the, to actually have Gangi of Anarchy win, to have Honda and Ashino win, then they probably would have just waited until Ashino's back and then did the rematch then, but they didn't. So that makes it more likely that that actually always was the plan, to have Miyahara and Nomura be in the title matches on both nights and then have them win here to do like a bit of like heating them up a bit more for the match on the next night as well.
Yeah. And the match was fine, like three gentlemen's three. I mean, you know, yeah. I thought the last couple of minutes were fine, but it was just, you know, middling and cheating otherwise.
Yeah, no, it wasn't really, like, I definitely had higher expectations for the match, but it just was just kind of plodding along.
Well, because the Suwama and Kono matches that where they don't do all the bullshit were actually kind of good in the real world tag.
Yeah, it was literally just roll a coin and then, or roll a dice basically and see if it lands on cheating or not. And if you get cheating, then you get a bad match, like, I wouldn't even call it bad, just kind of boring. And
Yeah.
If not, you're actually going to get a good match. And unfortunately, the dice landed on cheating here.
And in an interesting change, they did the Battle Royal in the main event. And it was a 22-man. And Takuya Nomura defeated Ryo Inoue, who was the sort of survivor, last survivor, with a PK in 12 minutes and 1 second. You had Shuji Ishikawa, Yuma Aoyagi, Nomura, Jun Seto, Rei Seto, Mitsuya Nagai, Yoshitatsu, Hikaru Sato, Yusuke Kodama, Dan Tamura, Masao Hanabata, Yuma Anzai, Kaz Hayashi, Atsuki Aoyagi, Kento Miyahara, Rising Hayato, Masanobu Fuchi, Ryuki Honda, Takao Mori, Black Menso Rei. Now some highlights. I mean, obviously this wasn't like great. I mean, it's a Japanese battle royal. They're just standing around and all climbing on top of each other. But at one point, because this was in the main event, Miyahara came out wearing the tag titles and the triple crown and was just sitting on the corner and grabbed Ryo Inoue and was like hiding behind him. But later on, Masanobu Fuchi pins Miyahara with the inside small package cradle. Well, of course, everyone jumps on to keep that happen while wearing the belts, but I thought that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, when is Fuchi getting his triple crown shot?
When is Gianni Valletta getting his triple crown shot? When is Izanagi getting
His triple crown shot? Gianni Valletta never, because the jury is gone. So
yes, and not Izanagi either. But that was fun, and I thought the last couple of minutes between Ryo Inoue and Nomura was actually pretty good, because they were just kicking the shit out of each other.
Yeah, no, I think Inoue is coming along really nicely. Like, I'm really excited what they're gonna do with him.
Yeah, so that's that show. So we move on to the third, which drew 1,041. Paul, it's really weird that the second day drew less than the first.
Yeah.
Because it's usually the opposite, because day two has the triple crown. I don't know if I have any theories. Nomura is not a draw, or it's just saturation of all the other shows going on.
I think it might, maybe it's because the Kyushu show actually happened on the same day. So clearly people would rather watch Tajiri than watch Kento Miyahara.
Right. Well, it should also be noted that this also did more fans than last year, too.
I mean, it might just be, again, like, kind of the fact that, like, I mean, not to blame it on the economy, but it's kind of shit everywhere. So it might be a thing where people could only afford, like, I mean, but then again, if you can only afford tickets to one of the shows, I would probably go to the triple count rather than the tag title one. So it is still weird that it drew more, but who knows,
but the thing with the economy is, though, all the shows drew more than last year.
But they drew worse compared to like non-pandemic years, and I think,
of course. Well, these are still clap crowds technically. Yeah. And so to open up, we had Hikaru Sato and Dan Tamura defeating Rising Hayato and Ryo Inoue in 8 minutes and 7 seconds with a Death Valley Bomb from Tamura on Inoue. This is a lot of fun. Just great opener. Like, these four guys. Inoue looked awesome here, I thought.
Yeah, no, Inoue, like, he also sold his ass off, but, like, his offense looks really, really nice. Like, he really is becoming, like, a mini Kawada now.
Yeah. Next up, Black Manta Rei, Mitsuya Nagai defeated Yusuke Kodama and Masao Hanabata in 6 minutes and 8 seconds with a Stretch Plum from Nagai on Hanabata. Again, perfectly acceptable, but maybe they are doing something with Nagai, because I would have, you know, you could have had Mensa Rei loose here to, you know, a former All-Asia Tag Team Champion team.
And also, like, the fact that he also, like, he confronted, like, Masao before the match as well. Like, that's when I really noticed, like, yeah. The guy looks motivated. Like, what's happening here? I haven't seen him like this in, like, ever?
Years.
Yeah, definitely.
But, yeah.
So that seems like they're doing something there.
Next up, we had Naoya Nomura defeating Ryuki Honda in 6 minutes and 49 seconds with a spear into a jackknife hold. Paul, it's scandalous that this only went less than 7 minutes, because this was turning into something fucking awesome, and then, bam, it was just over.
I hope they run this back in a champion carnival and give them a proper match.
Yes. I still went 3¾ stars because I thought it was too damn good. Yeah. But they could easily have... They could do a 4-star match in like 12 minutes, I think.
Yeah, no, this was already really good as a sprint, so I really, really hope that they notice that and give them a proper match.
Yeah, just awesome. And, well, you know, they're given no... This was obviously one of Nomura's quicker wins, but... Oh, we forgot to mention this. They didn't announce any new signings.
No.
At the beginning of January 2nd. I had my fingers crossed for my beautiful boy Naoya, but it didn't happen.
No, I would assume he had an offer on the table.
I'm
very certain he did. But
to be in all honesty, there would be I don't think there was anyone else worth signing.
No,
other than him.
Like, maybe I would consider signing Kuma Doi, but it's clear that All Japan doesn't really think all that much of them.
Well, Doi is a Tajiri guy.
Yeah. So that might be one of the reasons as well. And now they're also bringing in like a few more like more expensive freelancers like Doi and Suzuki.
Yep.
So I'm sure that's also like a thing where they're like...
Well, when the more expensive freelancers come in, Kuma Doi get the shaft first.
Yeah, I mean, they're not on the show. They're not on the previous show.
I would maybe consider signing Hana Abada.
No, I don't think you need to, yeah.
Yeah, like... I don't know if Kodama would even sign because is he not a teacher?
Yeah, he's a teacher. Like he's very much just a part-timer. Like I don't think he would consider even signing. So if Nomura doesn't want to sign, then there's really no one else on this roster right now that I would want to give that kind of like contract money to, basically.
Yeah, definitely. And then Suwama, Jun Saito, and Rei Saito defeated Yoshitatsu, Yuji Nagata, and Yuma Anzai in 8 minutes and 14 seconds with a referee stop when, you know, Yoshitatsu was in the sleeper from Suwama. But we had it's not technically a full breakup angle, but they came to blow. Suwama and the Saitos came to blows because Taru tried to throw the powder, but it ended up hitting Suwama and everything.
We also missed... Actually, we missed the whole angle that happened before it with Onita.
Oh, yes. Onita came out. And then... they're going to do an electric current death match on February 4th.
Yeah, it's Onita and Yoshitatsu.
Is it, though? Because they haven't formally announced
it. Yoshitatsu was there. Like, because that's how this whole match happened. Because they basically did a Heyman thing where Voodoo Murderers comes out to attack Yoshitatsu, and then Nagata and Anzai make the save, and then that turns into a match.
Yeah. Should be noted that Onita got no pop.
Nope.
I know it was a clap crowd, but you would think someone like Onita would have gotten some more noise than
I mean, Onita is just the ultimate example of just diminishing returns.
Yeah.
Like, if you just compare him to, like, the mid-90s to now, like, just... Other people from that time have managed to sustain their pops, and Onita just hasn't. Like, it's just not anything now.
He's not a draw at all. Like, if you go and you look at some of the shows that he's worked, like, there's no evidence that he's any sort of draw now. And this has been like this for a few years now.
Yeah. And arguably, like, let's say if we go back to, like, 95. In 1995, Onita is a way bigger draw than Keiji Muto.
In 95 Muto had the Takada match.
True. But still, like just kind of like looking at the 90s, like Onita is like generally, I would say, overall a bigger draw.
He was a bigger draw than Muto at certain
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Whereas now, like, Muto just worked like in front of 9,500 people at the Budokan in the main event, and Onita came out in the middle of an All Japan Korakuen show with no reaction.
Yeah. So I don't need it, but I think that show on the 4th is a sold show. So whoever's paying for it, I think obviously wants Onita there.
I mean, if that's all that is, then like whatever, fine, sure.
Yeah, because it's their responsibility to fill it up, not All Japan.
Exactly, like if All Japan just gets their money and they don't have to pay Onita a cent, then whatever.
But we'll talk about another match on that show though in a bit. For the All-Asia Tag Team titles, Nosawa Rangai and Kendo Kashin defeated Takao Omori and Masao Inoue in 14:59 with a small package hold from Nosawa on Omori. My God. the champions fail in the first defense. Paul, I'm a dud. This was just a horrible match.
I actually wrote you when I watched this, like, does this ever end? And it just didn't.
It kept because going. It went way too
it's
long.
Still going now.
My God. Yeah. Just awful. And caution was absolutely useless. Yeah. And Nosawa was, well, I don't know how long they're going to have these titles, but Nosawa was going to be around for a bit longer.
Yeah, but I mean, he's also like, yeah, I don't know. It's the All Asia title, so like as long as this whole thing gets like quarantined to the All Asia tag title division, then I'm fine with it. Because those titles just alternate between like being undercard work rate titles and whatever this is.
Yeah, just awful. Please just skip the match. And then Minoru Suzuki, Naruki Doi, and Hokuto Omori making their debut as a unit, defeated Shuji Ishikawa, Yuma Aoyagi, and Atsuki Aoyagi with them. When Omori pinned Atsuki with the Muso Essen, this was great. And this new Suzuki team, they worked like a pretty well-oiled machine considering this was their first match as a unit.
Yeah, but I mean, both Suzuki and Doi are like really experienced in these kind of matches.
But Omori looked
Omori definitely held his own, and now he's finally gone heavyweight.
Perhaps.
After everything. Like, because it sure seems like that. Because he just pinned the junior champion. And he's not going to challenge for the belt.
Well, did he say he wasn't going to challenge?
I mean, I have a feeling that he's now actually a heavyweight. Which is so weird that they had him go like winless in the junior tournament. And then he just goes and joins up with Suzuki and just becomes a heavyweight.
Well, he needed the tutelage of an experienced wrestler like Minoru Suzuki.
Yeah. But this was, like, really good for what it was. Like, it was relatively short.
Oh, yeah.
I also loved, like, Ishikawa and Omori going, like, chest to chest at the beginning. Because technically, Omori, like, betrayed the All Japan home army now.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I thought this was really fun. And I really hope that, like, there's something coming out of the Suzuki Doi and Omori, like, faction. Like, I really love
it. I would assume after Hayashi versus Atsuki, we'll find out if he's challenging or not.
Yeah, and if he's not, then I would say he's a heavyweight now.
But I'm really into this new team, the Suzuki Goon.
Yeah, it's Neo Suzuki Goon or whatever their name is actually going to be.
Yeah. So that's something to look forward to. And then in the main event for the Triple Crown, Kento Miyahara defeated Takuya Nomura in 28 minutes and 42 seconds with a shutdown German suplex for his third defense of the title. I thought this was great. I thought that it very much had a very similar structure to so many other Miyahara Triple Crown matches, but I thought that Nomura brought some extra stiffness, and I thought Kento worked a little stiffer than usual here too. Some of his blackout knees looked a lot harsher than usual, and it just built to like a big war, and you know, Kento pulled out the win in the end, but I thought Takuya got a lot of shine, and it felt like, you know, that obviously he's going to be around because he's still champion, but it was both similar and different, but different enough that I think it's something that you should definitely go out of your way to see if you haven't seen a Kento Miyahara Triple Crown match in a while.
Yeah, I made the mistake and watched this on the same day as I watched Wrestle Kingdom.
Oh, okay.
I did kind of leave a couple of hours in between as like a palate cleanser, but I think that definitely didn't help. I liked it well enough. I didn't think it was like a great match. I think it was bordering on 4 stars. I'm not sure
if
I'm
willing to
pull the trigger on that.
You're not the only person who was like, it was good but not great. I think it sort of just was how into it you got with sort of like Nomura's work.
Yeah, I mean, I did like kind of like Kento's work in this as well, just based on him just kind of being a bit lackadaisical at the beginning and then kind of getting more into it as the match went along when he was like, oh, I actually need to take this seriously. So yeah. I liked that part of the match. And then otherwise, yeah, I thought it was really fun, but just I don't think it got quite there in terms of being a great match.
Yeah. So, I mean, reviews are all over the place on this, I will say. So that's not surprising at all. It's interesting that so certainly one of the more divisive is a strong word, but definitely one of the matches that I saw of the like the sort of first week of January that had reviews all over the place. You either loved this or thought it was good. I didn't see
I think if you hated this, then I don't know. Like you probably shouldn't be watching All Japan, to be quite honest.
But a lot of people, a lot of people really love this, including myself. And then after the match, both Yuma Aoyagi and Yuji Nagata came out to challenge for the Triple Crown. Kento Miyahara told Nagata, "You lost your spot in your company. You're going to have to prove yourself some more before you get a title shot," which was hilarious, I thought. It's such a pew pew. He's shooting. But then Yuma once again promised another New Japan wrestler the first crack at the title if he wins, because he already offered that to Taichi on December 25th show in the post-match promo. So on February 4th in, what's the name of that place? It is on the, it's like the western edge of Tokyo. That's barely Tokyo.
Oh, yeah, I don't remember it either.
Hachioji Sub Arena. We're getting Yuma versus Kento. I'm not sure how I feel about this, Paul.
Yeah.
Because I don't think Yuma's winning.
I don't either. I think he has because they also already announced the the Kento and Nomura, or Kento and Takuya Nomura versus Nomuyagi match as well.
Yeah, that's on the 22nd.
So if Kento and Takuya Nomura defend the titles there, I think Yuma has a chance. I don't think they're making Yuma a double champion. But if Nomuyagi win the titles, then Yuma is absolutely going to lose the Triple Crown match.
Yes, because with Kento, if like Yuma wins and you have Kento and Takuya Nomura as the tag champions, that's like a team that you can put up top to support Yuma. Mm-hmm. But also, the only thing is, like, All Japan also announced what I would call, an ambitious schedule by their standards. So on March 21st, they have a show at Oda War Gym. June 17th, Oda War Gym. September 8th, Yoyogi National Stadium, the second arena, where those Taka Taichi Mania shows have happened. And then December 31st, another show at Yoyogi, number 2.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, no, is no, very no. interesting.
It's definitely, they're getting a bit more... They're getting a bit more adventurous, let's say, or a bit more ambitious.
Which is fine and good, but what are they going to put on those shows?
Yeah.
And Yuma's got to win the Triple Crown this year. I just don't see why, like, it's just a bad idea if he
doesn't. I still feel like the plan is for him to win back-to-back Champion Carnivals and then beat Kento.
So you're going to go to... Now, does he beat Kento and Oda Ward for the title?
I would say so. I think that makes the most sense.
Yeah. I don't know. I just don't like this placement of this match.
No, I don't get this either. And then, like, Nagata is still waiting in the wings as well.
Now, see, I'm thinking it's Nagata versus Kento at that Oda Ward show in March.
That could also happen. And then, but does Nagata win there, or does Kento win?
Oh, God, Kento wins. I don't think that New Japan... It just doesn't seem like New Japan is going to force All Japan to put the title on Nagata.
Yeah.
Like... Noah wanted to put the title on Kojima.
True. Yeah, that wasn't. And same with Tiger Mask and the Junior title match. Like they thought they could
make Atsuki, even though I still think, given the way that Hikaru Sato's reign was going, you could have just had Atsuki beat Hikaru Sato at the Budokan, and that would have meant.
Yeah, the only requirement New Japan had there was that he had to get a certain number of defenses. But he basically rushed.
Did
like
they even, or did they just want to make?
I think that was New Japan going. If he wins the title, we don't want him to lose, like to have no defenses.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So yeah, I'm not thrilled about it, but I mean, I don't think it's fatal. But I just think that they better tell a hell of a story.
Yeah.
And Yuma's got to win.
Yeah,
the
I think it very much. Like I think we're gonna know after the tag team title match.
Yeah, for sure. But like the thing is, if you do have Yuma, like, are you going to have Yuma win at this show, and is that maximizing Yuma's win even?
No, because that's why I'm thinking he's not winning here.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so just a couple of more All Japan notes. So yeah, on January 22nd, it's Asuki Aoyagi versus Kaz Hayashi and Kento and Takuya versus Yuma and Naoya for the World Tag Team Titles. And Toshizo versus Minoru Tanaka for the Gayori TV title. Mm-hmm. And then, also I see Naruki Doi and Hokuto Omori versus Yuma Anzai and Ryo Inoue.
Yeah,
that could be really fun
as well.
And a Shotaro Ishino return match. Thankfully, his shoulder injury is not one of those long-term things. Shotaro Ishino, Ryuki Honda, and Masao Hanabata versus Yuji Nagata, Hikaru Sato, and Dan Tamura. Again, pretty good. Mm-hmm. Shuji Ishikawa, Takao Omori, Yoshitatsu, and Ren Ayabe finally returning to All Japan versus Suwama, Kono, Jun Saito, and Rei Saito.
So and we're then, probably getting like a breakup angle there for Wooda Murders.
I would hope so. It's time to pull the plug. And I think whoever's in charge now wants to pull the plug. Yeah.
I mean, you can keep the Saitos as heels with Taro as their manager.
I'd keep Taro as their manager. I'm not going to
Kono lie. Can go, I don't know, do Kono things, but...
Yeah, he can go back to Vamostar.
Yeah, exactly. And then Suwama can, like, form a team with Anzai or something.
Yeah, for sure. I think that Nagata's not going to be around forever, so I really think you do have to form the Suwama and Anzai tag team at some point. And then Oji Shiba returns for a few shows. I'm just looking at some things worth talking about. January 11th at the in Yokohama at the Hotogaya Public Hall. Paul, Black Mensa Ray versus Black Tiger.
And it's going to be the shit Black Tiger as well.
Yeah.
He was so bad. Why would you bring him back months later? No reason.
I know. I would hope Black Mensa Ray wins that.
Hopefully, yeah, but... Why do you bring Tiger back if you don't give him a win? Like, I don't know. It's just very odd.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Also, real quick, I'm also going to lock up Nomu Yagi winning the titles as well on the 22nd.
Yeah. I'm not going to lock that up, but I think that's going to happen. And I think, they'll be great tag
team champions. They made way too much of a big deal of them reuniting for them to just lose.
Yeah. And then the main event of that show on the 11th is Kento Miyahara, Rising Hayato, and Kaz Hayashi versus Yuma Aoyagi, Atsuki Aoyagi, and Naoya Nomura, where I figure that Hayashi's probably going to pin Atsuki.
We're probably not going to get a Voodoo Murderers breakup on the previous show, because Suwama's still teaming with the Saitos here.
No, I just said the 11th. I went out of
order. Oh, sorry, yeah, okay.
So that's January 22nd, and then this is January 11th, and then January 15th at 2AW Square, which is a too good a card for 2AW Square, if you ask me. I would say the highlights here are... Kento Miyahara, Rising Hayato, and Kotaro Suzuki versus Yuma Aoyagi, Atsuki Aoyagi, and Naoya Nomura.
Yeah.
Dan Tamura versus Naruki Doi.
Yeah, that should be really, really fun as well. Like, I'm looking forward
to this one to watch. Here's one to watch. Hokuto Omori versus Hikaru Sato.
I think that one, again, is like a very much, like, I think Hokuto is winning that one.
I think Hokuto winning will tell us a lot. About
and the way he wins as well.
Yeah, for sure. Well, they don't really seem like a cheating faction. They seem like a kicking ass, but in a heelish way faction.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, for me it's more like how quickly he wins.
Oh, for sure, yeah. And then on the 26th, no card at the Gunma Green Dome Maebashi, but you've got a bunch of outsiders. You got Naoya Nomura, Kotaro Suzuki, Yutaka Yoshie, Mizada.
Seen him in a while.
Andy Wu, Ryoji Sai, Boo.
Why?
Kumadoi.
I thought we were done with him.
Well, yeah, but I think this is a one-off. Because this is probably also a sold show. Ryoji Sai, Kumadoi, and Fuma. So that is it. I would say overall, Paul, I thought these shows were a little lackluster from the match quality standpoint, apart from the junior title match and the Triple Crown and the Nomura versus Honda.
Yeah, I don't think there was really anything that you need to go out of your way to watch as well. Like, I like the Triple Crown, but like, I don't think it's like appointment viewing. Like, you need to go and watch this.
Yeah, I guess it will come down to whose opinion do you trust more, mine or Paul's.
Yeah.
Basically, so the choice is up to you.
It depends. It depends. Like,
if you like your wrestling opinions generally align with more. The shit out of people, you probably should watch it, I would say.
Yeah.
But if you're, not like really into Takuya Nomura, I would say, I guess you probably could skip it then. That's probably the easiest way to go.
Yeah.
I do like mostly what they've been setting up and who they've been using.
Yeah, there's some weird Triple Crown.
But the Triple Crown, I don't know. That's my biggest red flag right now.
Yeah. Like, I don't know really what the plan here is or if they even have a plan. But, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. They should, because you should have definitely have a plan for your top championship.
You should, but, there's always the difference between should and...
Yeah, especially with this company. So, Paul, any final thoughts about anything about related to all... Oh, I forgot to say, Yuma Aoyagi won the Shuffle Tag Team Tournament on New Year's Eve, teaming with Yuki Ueno and Daichi Hashimoto. So that's a nice little accomplishment for him. I haven't watched that show yet, though.
No, me neither. But that sounds really fun. Like, I probably should go and...
At least watch the finals, probably.
Yeah.
And so, any final thoughts on Noah or All Japan?
I think it's going to be really interesting. Like, I think... We're going to know a lot more about Noah's, like, future, like right now it looks really good, I would say, but I feel like we're going to know a lot more when we actually know what the card is for the Muta show and the New Japan show. Yeah. So right now I think Noah should definitely feel very good of what they've done at the Budokan show, and it's just going to be, we'll see if this is sustainable.
Well, we'll see if New Japan geek them out.
Yeah.
Because it's just such strange timing. You have this momentum, but then you're going to deal with New Japan, who drive a hard bargain.
Yeah.
You know? So.
And then immediately after, you have, and the fact that we still don't have any match for the Muta show at all.
Yeah. So that's that. All right. Yeah, I don't have any final thoughts. I'm generally cautiously optimistic about the direction of both companies with the sort of caveats that we covered. So, and we did it in an hour and a half, which is sort of surprising.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was expecting like a long thing. But really, I mean, I think Wrestle Kingdom, because of how successful and good it was, sort of sucked all the air out of the room.
Yeah. And Jake, goddamn.
Well, Jake, yeah. Well, because I wanted to sit here and talk about, like, oh my God, did you see when Jake jumped Tetsuya Naito and formed that new faction?
No, he comes out and does a weird angle with Jack Morris.
Oh my God, and how, yeah.
Not making another video.
I wish I had the confidence of Jake Lee, because he leaves All Japan, has a contract offer on the table, but no, he's like, no, I still clearly want to end up in New Japan. Even though there's now zero evidence that New Japan want him.
They've ever been interested.
Maybe Hiroshi Tanahashi likes him, but there's no evidence that The Office does.
Love that Tsubama was just shooting, and like Tajiri told Jake Lee to go to New Japan, but also in hindsight,
yeah, maybe Tsubama's correct.
Yes, because you know what he said. He said Tajiri told Jake Lee to go to New Japan, not Yuji Nagata, who was also in a promotion at the same time, told Jake Lee to go to New Japan. You know, the guy that runs that dojo,
also whispering things in Yuma Anzai's ears.
Yes, exactly. So. I don't know if I'm Jake and like the guy that runs the dojo is there and he doesn't tell me to go to New Japan, but this other dude who doesn't have any connection to the promotion tells me to do it. Who should I believe?
Exactly.
Such an idiot.
Yeah. And well, also not signing a Noah contract, given that one probably exists for him, is also a dumb idea.
Yeah.
Because there's only...
Yeah. It'll be so funny if he's back in All Japan by like...
There is only so much that they're going to... Well, I don't know. Unless you're a 50-year-old shooter, there's only so much that Noah's going to do with you if you don't have a contract with them.
I mean, he is a shooter. He had an MMA career.
It was very brief.
It's better than Kendo Kashin's MMA career.
Kendo Kashin had a big win.
Yeah, he had a big win.
But it's...
I also could have won that fight.
But I think, yeah, he should just sign the contract and just see what happens, because he's not getting into New Japan. Now, he probably thinks he can somehow reinvent himself in Noah, and then New Japan will come calling.
Yeah, well, he certainly didn't that for his debut.
So, I have a feeling like we're going to be having more these Jake bitch sessions very soon.
And I really thought we were done with it, but no, I think it's only going to get worse.
Well, people were dunking on us in the Voice of Wrestling Discord because Jake showed up in Noah, and we're like, oh, you're going to have to deal with him some more.
I'm also going to blatantly steal this, but he's really the Jeb Bush of wrestling.
Yes. Please clap.
Please clap.
They didn't. No. Well, they a very polite smattering of claps, but that was about it. So, all right. So we'll be back in, I think we'll come back after, we should come back after the final Muta show, because then we'll have a lot to talk about. We'll have some, and we'll be able to talk about Jake Lee. And as much as we dunk on Jake, I am genuinely looking forward to Jake Lee versus Yoshiki Inamura.
Yeah. No. I like, all memes aside, I do look forward to that match. It's just, I would in no way, shape, or form put any money, betting money on that match, because.
I'm going to do it. I'm feeling lucky, Paul.
I mean, good luck. Good luck.
So, all right. So for Paul Vosch, I'm Gerard DeTroil, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
Music, it's not just part of our daily lives, it's part of our wrestling fandom as well, and it has been for decades. That's where this show comes in. Music of the Mat, the podcast devoted exclusively to the music of pro wrestling, hosted by Andrew Rich. Hey, that's me. Each episode delivers a different topic with a variety of great guests, fun conversations, musical analysis, and of course, a heartfelt pun or two. New episodes drop every other Tuesday on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast app of choice. Check out Music of the Mat only on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.